ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. श्रीमद्भागवतम् 7th कैंटो 8th चैप्टर टेक्स्ट 17 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड द लॉर्ड स्लेज द किंग ऑफ द डीमंस. सत्यं विधातुं निजभृत्य भाषितम् व्याप्तिं च भूतेष्वखिलेषु चात्मना अदृश्यतात्यद्भुतरूपमुद्वहन् स्तम्भे सभायां न मृगं न मानुषम् Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. To prove that the statement of his servant Prahlad Maharaj was substantial, in other words, to prove that the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, even within the pillar of an assembly hall, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari exhibited a wonderful form never before seen. The form was neither that of a man nor that of a lion. Thus the Lord appeared in his wonderful form. Thus the Lord appeared in his wonderful form in the assembly hall. Purport. When Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad Maharaj, "Where is your Lord? Is he present in this pillar?" Prahlad Maharaj fearlessly replied, "Yes, my Lord is present everywhere." Therefore, to convince Hiranyakashipu that the statement of Prahlad Maharaj was unmistakably true, the Lord appeared from the pillar. The Lord appeared as half lion and half man, so that Hiranyakashipu could not understand whether the great giant was a lion or a human being. To substantiate Prahlad's statement, the Lord proved that his devotee, as declared in Bhagavad Gita, is never vanquished. Kaunteya pratijanihi. Name Bhakta Pranashyati. Prahlad Maharaja's demoniac father had repeatedly threatened to kill Prahlad. But Prahlad was confident that he could not be killed, since he was protected by the Supreme Lord. By appearing from the pillar, the Lord encouraged his devotee, saying in effect, "Don't worry, I am present here." By manifesting his form as Narasimha Dev, the Lord also preserved the truth of Lord Brahma's promise that Hiranyakashipu was not to be killed by any animal or any man. The Lord appeared in a form that could not be said to be fully a man or a lion. Satyam vidhatum nija sat as true, the words of nija britya, his own servant. In this case, Prabhupada clarifies that as Lord Brahma, and it could also be taken as Prahlad Maharaj, both. In the word for word, he says, the words of his own servant, Prahlad Maharaj, when he said that, "Yes, Father, the answer to your question is my Lord who is protecting me. Is he everywhere?" The answer is yes. And if we take Bhritya as Brahma, who had assured Hiranyakashipu that no man or animal or demigod or human being can kill you. So that also is true. In the previous verses, Hiranyakashipu is on record saying, "Gopayet Haristvadya. Let me see who comes to protect you, this so-called Hari of yours. Does he have the power? Does he have the strength?" So, Hiranyakashipu, of course, as we have seen over the last lectures, is the personification of material consciousness. He can also be described as the highest development of material consciousness. We feel it would be nice to have a life which could be defined in one sentence as, I get what I want. At least I had that feeling. It could be nice if I could just get what I want. Here is one person who actually got what he wanted. And when he got what he wanted, it was not dependent on material laws. It was not dependent upon non-availability of something. It was not possible to tell Hiranyakashipu that, sir, this thing is not ready, this thing is not available. The Bhagavatam describes, Hiranyakashipu could glance at the rain gods and they had to shower rain. I was just thinking, if he could specifically say that, I am strolling in my courtyard and I want a light shower at 6 o'clock in the evening, it has to be done like that. There is no other choice. And only in my courtyard, not a single drop should go in the veranda. We may not understand, but actually, he got minerals, he got gems, precious stones from earth. He got unseasonal fruit. Like right now, if somebody wants apples, we'll say, well, that's not the right season now. You have to go to Himachal Pradesh or somewhere. Says, no, I want them now in my own courtyard. And that particular tree had to give forth apples. I had seen somewhere that Japanese scientists have tried to, biotechnologists, they also try to give unseasonal fruits or vegetables. The taste like cardboard is a different thing. But, I mean, if you tweak material nature beyond a particular thing, she just gives a form without a substance. You get that particular vegetable, you get that particular fruit, but doesn't have the taste. So they say, okay, then somebody will inject some taste into it. Shoot a load of saccharine into that fruit and then it tastes sweet too. But it's not that natural fruit. So modern man also succumbs to this desire to get what I want. There are various components of this. Get is the process of actually receiving it. Whether it is 100% or not, that's a different thing. I, who is this I? That's another big thing to define. Who am I? And I want, that means then my mind and my mind's desires, and that could change, or so many variables are involved. The Bhagavatam doesn't describe all the fits and all the convulsions which Hiranyakashipu must have experienced, but it's just one sentence. They describe, Bhagavatam describes his state of affairs as Sada Samudvigna Dhyam. Sada, always. Udvigna is a specific thing which is described about the mind or intellect. Udvigna is agitated, not peaceful. Mothers have experience of children when they are in their tantrum throwing state. Would you like this? No. Would you like that? No. Would you eat something? No. So what do you want then? They don't know. That's a fact. They don't know what they want. Or they just want attention. That's one thing. But grown-ups, and Hiranyakashipu was quite grown-up in the real sense of the term. He had grown up with the clouds, big stout body. And if he would always think in terms of, I want this. And he was getting it. And then he is not just udvigna, but some udvigna. Completely mess. Agitated to the max. Always angry. And then Urugandhina. Bhagavatam describes the liquors he used to drink, strong smelling liquors. He would just say hello in a whole assembly and everybody would understand that this gentleman is in high spirits today. He would be always like that. Teh Amrit Maharaj, when he was here, he was commenting on that. That those of you who go to the West, either mentally or physically, for either money or for inspiration, you should understand that this is what that civilization has brought. That people, politicians, scientists, they can't function without this Urugandhina, strong smelling liquors. There was this president of a big Western power, and he had inaugurated a 3-day session of his political party, a seminar on educating them. And he began on the second day by saying, "Very happy to see you all on this third day." And somebody said, second. It was the second day. Oh, all right, second day. Why? Because he had the speech by heart, but whether it was second, third, or one president of the United States, he went to Brazil and said, "It is so nice to be in Bermuda. I always like to visit this place." So these are minor slip-ups, but then that's what that whole civilization is. Bhakti Vigyan Goswami Maharaj, previously Vaidyanath Prabhu, one of the main preachers in Russia, he was a upcoming scientist. He could be, I think he was a member of that USSR Academy of Scientists, Science, and a big career, perks, whatever Russian economy could offer. And then he came in touch with Prabhupada's books. And then the KGB started to tail him, find out what this person is up to now. So initially came minor officers saying that, "We know that you are aligning yourself with a particular group which is a political enemy of our nation and you're not allowed to do that." He continued, and one day he was visited by a senior KGB operative. And he said, "Look, now enough is enough. We have decided this literature is bad for us. And why a scientist like you should be reading this kind of Vedic literatures or taking part in those activities? Religion, you know, is not approved by our society." So he listened to him. Obviously, he could not do anything else. And then he said, "Your family, your future career, everything could be at stake. Now, I have been told not to use any other thing except words. So today is the last opportunity." And when the KGB in the USSR meant business, they were serious. Overnight, no one would have even known where this family has been deported. So he said, "I was really scared." And then, somehow, in the course of few days, in a public park, he saw that same man. He was so drunk. He was sprawled on a park bench or something like that, drooling saliva, hardly his clothes were in order. And Maharaj was saying in that class that, "I was thinking, this man is threatening me. If I tell him to stand up, he won't be able to stand up now." So he said, just by seeing him, he felt such a sort of disdain, some sort of disapproval of,
what society am I serving? Here is a chance to serve Krishna, serve the mission of his pure devotee. And this man is threatening me. So what? What is the limit what he can, the damage that he can inflict on me? And he said, suddenly he just felt a splurge of strength in him. And he just gave his papers, resigned, left the country, went to Sweden, started translating books. Many of the volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam or some of the important books which were distributed in the early 90s, late 80s were all translated by him. Or at least the entire production was seen by him. And now of course he is responsible for one major temple construction there. So this is how we can understand that when an entire society, you may have a Nobel Prize winning scientist or a poet or a preacher or whoever, but then all their thoughts are generated by alcohol. So where is, like when the hippies who had come to Prabhupada, at least they were honest. They asked Prabhupada, can I take LSD along with chanting Hare Krishna? I mean, it was very candid. That day we were seeing a video, that old movie made by a news reporter, Happiness on Second Avenue. That's the title. So Prabhupada told him, he could see that they are addicted to bad habits, but they are at least innocent. They are sinful in the sense that they had committed themselves for these habits. But they were inquisitive, they are curious. So Prabhupada said, your spiritual life is here. With LSD, you put LSD and then you explore the realms of consciousness or colors or lights or whatever. And who knows where you will land up. But he said, when you chant Hare Krishna, so he in the initial stages, all Prabhupada did was teach them the basics of Krishna consciousness and always emphasize as loudly as possible, chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Seeing lights was a major achievement in that LSD circle. You take something, you eat or drink or shoot in your veins, and then you start seeing lights. And they would exchange notes. If you drink this or if you do that, this is what you get. So one girl, it's a humorous story, she asked Prabhupada that, Swamiji, I like to chant Hare Krishna, but when I chant, I sometimes get these lights in front of me. And she was expecting some kind of approval or some kind of analysis from Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, chant more and it will go away. So Prabhupada had no time for analyzing specific LSD induced hallucinations or illusions. Why? Because Prabhupada was so clear. I just got this small excerpt from a 66 lecture, 1966. Prabhupada is telling the crowd in Second Avenue that destruction of the body is not destruction. This whole episode of Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad and the protection of Prahlad by Lord Narasimhadev has this element of Prahlad has two choices. Agree with his father or face destruction. That's all. His father had threatened him, I will sever your head, harami tvam shira, with my sword. Then he saw that his son is still not bending to his will. And he asked this famous question, where is your Lord? You always speak of Lord, Lord, Lord. Where is he? And as if to disprove
or as if to ask to give the lowest factor. Is he in this pillar? It was like that. He didn't ask Prahlad with awe and veneration that, is your all-pervading Lord in this pillar too? No, it was like, when you say all-pervading, for the Asuric mind, the first question is, then why can't I see him? Why doesn't he come in front of me? Why doesn't he present himself before me? So Prahlad said, yes. As I told you, he is everywhere. And I hope everywhere includes the pillar too. So he kept his sword aside. Swamushtina, that's how the Bhagavatam describes. He said, this is what I think of your so-called Lord. And smashed that pillar with his full strength. Now, Hiranyakashipu meant business. Prahlad was not just one administrative affair in his scheduled tasks to do for the day. This was important. The whole thing was at stake. I maintained his whole empire for my son. And look at what has gone in his head. He's talking in terms of devotion to Hari. And Prahlad, as much as Hiranyakashipu is determined to train him up, he is fearlessly preaching. He says, give up your envy. He didn't call him a fool, but he meant it. As Prabhupada said, don't call somebody a thief. Just say that that umbrella seems to be stolen property. He said, what do you mean? Well, I mean, your name is Ramesh and it says Rajesh. So, what do I understand? So, if you call somebody a thief, they get angry. But if you gently point out that that seems to be somebody's property, they understand. Everybody understands. Like the baby is born with his fingers curled up like that. That I want to show my, this is what I'll be doing in this world. Grasping everything. Whatever I see, whatever I want, what I like, I fancy, I will try to grasp. And finally, the last breath is Alexander. It is a, I don't know whether true or false, but it's a story that he said, keep my right hand out of my coffin. And they said, as he was dying. Then they say, Your Majesty, and why is that? Let the world know that one who conquered, actually conquered the whole world, has gone empty-handed. Look at my palms. I can't carry anything. So if I did not carry anything, how can anybody else? Others just simply dream of conquering. We actually did it. Of course, there was a sad lining to it. He would go in one direction and conquer something, but by the time you would reach the third place, the first one would be gone to somebody else. So finally, when he circled the whole world, he was back to square one. But at least he did that. He has a good name. People call their sons Alexander still. So, yeah, that's a criteria whether somebody is approved or not as to whether people will give their babies the same name. So parents say, we couldn't do anything, at least our son Alexander, call him like that. He could do it. So this was a, not just a battle of wits, but a clash of consciousnesses. Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu, it's a clash of consciousness. Hiranyakashipu thought he had all the power to do whatever. I can do this, I can do that, I can kill you. So, destruction is imminent. One of them has to go. Either Prahlad or Hiranyakashipu. Nowadays, for every sporting event, there is some kind of wagering or betting going on as to what are the chances.
At that time, if they would have been asked, they would ask the bookies as to, what do you say are the chances of Prahlad being saved? They say, 1,000,000 to none. There is no way. But they completely ignore that on what power Prahlad is fearlessly preaching. What is the source of his power? As much as Prahlad could see clearly the presence of the Lord everywhere, bhuteshu akhileshu, everywhere. And that is something which the least is, it should at least strike as something different. Why devotees, they do the things they do? Like we ask the non-devotees, why do you do things the way you do? And they also have the right to ask us, why you do things the way you do? Why you early morning just stand in front of a statue and sing songs, then you put a tree in between and you circle around it, and then you take some wooden beads and you murmur something. Why you do that? So we may say, we do this to become happy. Simple put, isn't it? We want to become happy. And if we ask them, so why you open brothels, why you open slaughterhouses, why you engage in gambling, and why you intoxicate yourselves, and they may give the same reason, and we want to become happy. Is it not? Nobody will say that, I smoke so that I die early, or I basically eat meat because I want to have something like a colorectal cancer or something like that. No one says that. So ultimately, it's phalena parichyate. It's what is the result? What is the result of a devotee doing something? Like if someone asks me that you can speak so high falutin language, have you seen that God whom you are worshipping for the last decade or so? In person, has he related to you? Has he told you that what you are doing is nice? So we say, well, we have a set of rules, we have a system as to what do you mean that you realize God? Like this question, it was raised in our class a few days ago. What do you mean by Krishna saying, Name Bhakta Pranashati? My devotee is never vanquished. So we took the case of few devotees who actually so-called were vanquished in the sense. Jatayu, for example. Jatayu tried to snatch away Sita, rescue mother Sita, fight with Ravana, and Ravana killed him. Koresh, the exalted disciple of Ramanujacharya, had his eyes plucked out and he lost his life later. Bhishma Dev, he desperately wanted to see that there should be no war. And the dharmic Pandavas, those who are, they are religious, they should not suffer like that. But he had to see that. In the purport that to this verse, Kaunteya Pratijanihi Name Bhakta Pranashati, Srila Prabhupada's first statement is, this should not be misunderstood. I was thinking, so why Prabhupada is beginning a purport like that? That this should not be misunderstood. The verse is, Krishna is assuring Arjun. Krishna assures Arjun that the process of bhakti is the most exalted, the surest path. And Arjuna's question, what about failure? There is a whole chapter in the Path of Perfection. Failure and success in yoga. Krishna has showed Arjuna, or he has told Arjun, that you perform this yoga and then you will enjoy. If you perform successfully, you will really enjoy. So Arjuna, as an intelligent person, his question is, okay, fine, if I do this, like if I pass a course, I get a good job. And sir, what if I fail? Obviously, you have to have that eventuality has to be understood. So Krishna says,
No, Arjun, there is no question of failure here. Kshipram bhavati dharmatma, shashvat shantim nigachati, kaunteya prati jani hi name bhakta pranashati. Srila Prabhupada's purport and Vishwanath Chakravartipada's purport, which was given 400 years ago, they are strikingly seeing two different points of view. Srila Prabhupada says, and I found it really reassuring, like sometimes I wonder, am I a devotee or should I call myself a devotee? In common parlance, I call, but then I know the reality myself, at least partial reality. So here in this purport, Prabhupada gives a very, very soothing, very reassuring kind of definition. Prabhupada says a devotee is one who is engaged in the 9 processes. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Mandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atmayamidam. Just the engagement is good enough. And then he adds, by engaging in these 9 processes, a devotee is in the process of cleansing his heart of all material contamination. In the process. So it's not that you don't become a devotee if you're not totally pure. You may not be a pure devotee, but at least you are one. So that's quite reassuring. And at the end of that purport, Prabhupada says, so therefore, that cleansing process is keeping the Lord in your heart. That is remembering. There is no other way for removing sinful reactions. As we say, sa bhaya abhyantara shuchi. Pass through all material conditions. But if you keep yas smaret pundarikaksham sa bhaya abhyantara shuchi. So Prabhupada gives a purport which we can understand. A deeper one is given by Vishwanath Chakravartipada. Well, not to call it deeper, but a different one rather. Where Arjuna tells Krishna, Vishwanath Chakravartipada is famous for giving his purports in a question-answer format. So his first question is, like if Arjuna would ask a question, hey Krishna, wait. You are telling me that apichet suduracharo, if my devotee has committed, acharan is behavior. Do, anything you apply do, that means bad behavior. If a su comes before do, then it is very abominable behavior. Like we have tar madhye jivati lobho moye sudurmati. Mati is intelligence or way of thinking. Durmati is bad intelligence. And sudurmati is very, very bad. Or sudushkaram. It's a way of Sanskrit language. So suduracharo, very, very bad behavior. And Krishna is saying there, kshipram bhavati dharmatma. So Vishwanath Chakravartipada says, look at Krishna's grammar. Look at the way Krishna has utilized Sanskrit grammar. He's not saying, Arjun, excuse him, later he will become dharmatma. No. Krishna is saying, he is becoming dharmatma. The present tense is used. Kshipram bhavati, he is becoming dharmatma. So you may say, well, choose one, either is dharmatma or papatma. You said he has engaged in bad behavior, so he is a bad person. And Krishna says, no. So the first question is, should he engage in some prayaschitta? So that verse, the acharya said, no need. Why? Because he is engaged in the process. He has not given up the process. So Krishna's mentality is revealed when he says that my devotee, he will never give up the lotus feet. He will never give up the service of my lotus feet. And then Vishwanath Chakravartipada gives a bottom-top view. What is happening in the devotee's mind?
He says, the devotee says, alas, I am like a black sheep among the assembly of devotees. I tried so much to give up this bad habit and again I have failed. Fie on me. I should be punished. I deserve to be punished. And in that mood, he strongly takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, which Prabhupada translates as chanting Hare Krishna without stoppage in that purport. So Arjuna could then ask, you think him as a dharmatma, you think that this devotee has not will not perish, but do you think Krishna, others will accept this version of yours? So then Krishna sort of, this Kaunteya Pratijani, Vishwanatha Chakravarti says, some sort of excitement, with some sort of energy, Krishna just shouts, Arjun, you go in those assemblies of disputants. You go in those assemblies of people who disbelieve my word. Take Mridanga, take Kartals, raise a big din, make a big noise. And people will say, what is the problem? Why are you making so much noise? The devotee of Krishna will never perish. So then the question would still arise, but Krishna, if your devotee will not perish, you love your devotee, why don't you go and tell that yourself? So Krishna seems to say that, I am not so creditable. My reputation is a little bit tempered. I am known to break promises. I am God, I can do anything. Of course, I don't want any material fame or something here. In fact, Krishna is hinting at, he says that very soon, these Kauravas, they would make such a big intrigue, they would make such a big conspiracy, that there will be a situation when your life will be in danger. And my pratigya, my word, is that I will not lift any weapon. And people have sort of put that faith in me that yes, if this person has said that, he will keep his word. But Arjuna, I'm going to break my own word. I'm going to go back. I don't care for any reputation. But if you, my devotee, my servant, if you do something, if you tell someone something, then it's my job. If my reputation goes down, I don't care. But if my devotee's reputation goes down, I can't tolerate that. So here, this connection, Nija Bhritya Bhashitam. If Prahlad has said, why not in this pillar? So we understand that Narasimhadev's incarnation is not because Hiranyakashipu threatened that pillar. It is only because Prahlad said, why not? Hiranyakashipu wanted to see, where is that Lord of yours? You always speak, Lord, Lord, where is he? But that doesn't mean he's inquisitive, he's trying to find out, oh, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? No. So Krishna has no reason to answer the demands made by demons. It is the word of his devotee. Within the context of fulfilling the devotee's word, the demons could be pleased, not pleased, or happy, or unhappy, or whatever. Demons get liberation. That doesn't mean that liberation is a very good benefit, or it is something desirable. Demons get benefit as a side benefit. Gatari, hatari gati dayaka. Rupa Goswami describes one of Krishna's qualities in Nectar of Devotion. Hata ari, one who kills his enemy, gati dayaka, gives him supreme destination. So Krishna wants to show that if I give my enemy some destination, you think I will give the same thing to my devotees? Today happens to be the Tithi.
I checked with the calendar, but the calendar is something else. But the tithi is the same of Srila Prabhupada's departure for America. One Srila Prabhupada disciple, Veerabahu Prabhu, in one of his Vyas Puja homages, revealed something which, at least I didn't read in the Lilamrit, that Sumati Morarji met Prabhupada at Kurukshetra. She, from the Pushti Marg, very devout lady. Seeing a sannyasi, she offered him pranam and said, "Can I get you something? Can I give you something?" Prabhupada politely refused. She said, "But I would like to offer some service to you." So they exchanged cards. And later, when things were falling in place and Prabhupada came to know that there is a sponsor, somebody can take care of my stay in the US. That was the time he decided to come to Bombay, meet Sumati Morarji, and clearly ask from her that, "Look, my everything is ready. I want to go to the West." So I was thinking to address this topic of Srila Prabhupada's departure from a little bit of historical background. Is Hinduism evangelical? Hinduism in a sense, if you say Varnashram, that's like a hot word, the V word today. It won't be approved. So please try to understand. I'm not saying Hinduism in a sense, the kind of thing which is dished out outside. But many people felt that that's not our part to go and convince somebody else. He is doing something and then that's his motive, that's his mind. That there were so-called spiritual leaders who were saying, "Your opinion is as good as my opinion. And my opinion is you are a fool, you are an ass." He said, no, not that. You won't accept that kind of opinion. So why are you priest then if everybody's opinion is as good as anybody's opinion? So this was the mire, this was the swamp in which so-called Hinduism was wallowing for so many centuries. Our Prabhupada compared India to be like a lame man. A lame man means somebody comes with a strong stick and just smashes the knees of someone to pulp. Where is the question of him getting up and running or walking even? Or standing up even? So a beautiful body, but ruined legs. And such a person left on the side of the road. That was India. People were thinking that we should not preach. Why should you preach to somebody else something else? And naturally, like a well-tended garden means you have manicured plants and pots in places. Let 3-4 monsoons go by, nobody looks at them. It looks like a garden, because it's written there, garden. But otherwise, it makes no sense. Some flowers are blooming, some are rotting, and there is obviously no care. So that so-called Hinduism was like that. Some pockets of some activity somewhere. But otherwise, for most part, no idea. I was talking with a devotee yesterday. He's from Odisha. So we were discussing, and I said, You were taught that Jagannath is the Supreme Lord in your childhood. So he said, "Well, not exactly Supreme Lord. But in one sense, yes. That when Jagannath Katha would be narrated, they would say Jagannath is Supreme. Then when Durga Saptami, they would say Durga is Supreme. And on some others, they would say that is Supreme." So we children or even the adult would say, basically, everybody is worshipable. Everybody is supreme. Just to sort the matter out. Peace. Everybody be at peace. As such, we have 33 million gods. And in Hinduism, we worship everybody. We respect everybody. Now, this thing is grand philosophy indeed. It is good. This is good to hear. Like that fast food kind of thing. Fast to cook and good to eat, but bad for the digestion. This kind of spiritual food is fast to cook, very easily made, good to eat, tasty, and ruins your body completely. Because in the end, you don't have philosophical answers for anything. You always feel dissatisfied. You always feel that we have so many systematic things, and why can't our religion be systematic? Like Govind Prabhu was telling yesterday, that South Indian poet, you meditate Shivoham, Shivoham, and I say, who is Durga? She is my mother. And who is Shiva? Me. So you, what? How do you put them together? Well, Shivoham, Shivoham is a good meditation. You go to the Shiva temple and you say, Shivoham, Shivoham, Shivoham. No answer. No answer. Then, in the beginning of the 19th century, that means 18 and something, something, some stirrings occurred. People were thinking of, hey, we should present. We should not preach in the sense that market our philosophy, but there is no harm in telling the outside world that India has this, India has that. Because the British had done this for us already. They said, like right now, some light is shed upon the 1830s where Wilson Jones and those, their ilk, all these people, they sort of tried to understand Vedic literature and their jaws gaped. They said, how do we defeat a whole continent when they have this kind of literature? So at one point of time, the Oxford University had a chair. Chair in a sense, not an ordinary chair, but a position that could be something like £1,800 award, which was big money at that time, for the best refutation of the Vedas. If somebody with little intelligence can really rail against or discredit the Vedas in the best possible way, you get a prize for it. So one philosopher, so-called philosopher, said, I think the entire library of the Vedas doesn't contain relevant information which can be found on one shelf of a good European library. So they said this, and all Indians said yes, of course. What to do? We have these Vedas where kings marry a crore of wives, and somebody has 10 heads, and somebody flies, and somebody, oh, maybe that time they didn't have Alice in Wonderland, they didn't have Humpty Dumpty, so people just came together and they made up these stories. So this is bad, but worse is when our own homegrown philosophers say, look, when Ravana shouted, it was like 10 heads making noise. That's why it was is called ten-headed. There's only one head. But actually, or Hanumanji, when he would run, almost as if he flew. So it could be like that. So that is worse even. The outsiders are bad because they say, I don't like what you have. But the insiders are worse. And all of them without any acharya. When the first principle says, Adau Guru Padashraya. So Shankaracharya, was he not evangelical in his preaching? Oh, he was so fierce. Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya. So it's not that preaching meant you take a hall and rent out some days and then address a body of people and announce the seminars. This could be taken in the cultural context. But preaching is the heart and soul of a devotee of Krishna. In fact, the Brajavasis are the best preachers. What do the gopis pray? Tava kritha kathamritam tapta jivanam. The gopis are enjoying Krishna, but they also know that there are those people in this material world whose life is a conflagration. It is fire in it. Tapta jivanam. We respect the six Goswamis,
But who are they? They are the Manjaris. They are gopis and Manjaris. So, giving Krishna is never far away from the mind of a pure devotee. It's not like, okay, I am with Krishna and I am enjoying and that's, I am happy with that. No. If I have Krishna, how sooner, how earlier can I give it to others? Unfortunately, the kind of Vedic information which was chosen by some people, and they were powerful intellectuals, they chose the Advaitic way. There are five rasas, we know, Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya. The West had a taste of Shanta. Shanta ras is God, the great unknown. I mean, don't laugh, but that's what the rasa is. That you know there is a God, and you say, how is he? Don't talk about him. He's a great unknown. To put him in image, to put him in poetry, to put him in this blasphemy against him. Your miserable material word, can they capture the great unknown? So he is great. You keep on talking about him as the great unknown. The more you know about him, you say, he's still the unknown. That's what Shanta is. In Shantaras, neutrality, the kind of definition we find in Nectar of Devotion, there is still some kind of appreciation for Krishna, the animals of Vrindavan. Like we have the monkeys, the deer, parrots. They all like Krishna. Otherwise, why would they stay on this altar here? They love Krishna, but their love can't be expressed. The deer just come and lick at his feet. The parrot just sit on a branch. But of course, the parrots of Dhawanal Kund or Madan Mohan Temple, you find them shrieking like anything. As if, you know, I don't know why I get this feeling. Like when people hear cricket commentaries on their transistors, and then, out, or hit, or whatever. So the parrots seem to be, Manadi Maharaj puts that in his book, the parrots seem to have seen some Krishna Leela and they want to shout it out to everybody. Hey, did you see that? Of course, we can't understand parrot language. But all day long they are shrieking, especially if you have been at Dhawanal Kund, those banyan trees, it's like a din completely all day long. So there is Shanta, but there is activity there. But the Shanta in Europe was when Moses went to that hill, he saw a bush, it was burning. And he said, it's burning, but it's still intact. So he came to know it's mystical. There is some. So he just ventured forward, he says, kneel down. And he said, oh, sorry. Take off your sandals. So he kept off his sandals. Then he came to know that God has to be respected like that. When you go, you kneel down, you... Nothing much. Then when Jesus came, Dasya was revealed. That one has to be serving the Lord. And a little bit of Vatsalya. Calling the Lord, O Father. O Father. I am... Father immediately means there is a relation of a son. So it is Vatsalya either way. Either the devotee is seeking Vatsalya Ras from the father as Pita, or the Lord seeing the devotee as his son. So Prabhupada pointed out later that, try to understand, when you say God is my father, won't you be overwhelmed with desires of, so what will the father give now? Father give me this, father give me this, father give me this. So Madhurya was never revealed at all. Because Madhurya is the highest. So Srila Prabhupada, when he would tell this to his disciples later, that there was some strong pushing inside. I should be doing something. But what? Prabhupada's guru had just told him that you could be a good English preacher. You could preach in the English language very nicely. It is very important to note that Prabhupada and his spiritual master didn't sit and had a series of meetings that you take some steamboat or go there and start some lectures and record your lectures and do this and do that. No. Just a nod, just a approval that whatever he writes, print it. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur has told his secretaries, whatever Abhay Charan writes, print it. Absolute is sentient, thou hast proved. Impersonal calamity, thou hast removed. Four lines. It's Victorian English, not something which we use nowadays. Sentient means having senses. Absolute truth, Param Satya, is a person with senses. Oh, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, by your teachings, you have proven that the absolute, supreme absolute truth is a person. And the impersonal calamity you have removed by your teachings, by your Gaudiya Math, by your presses and everything. And Bhaktisiddhanta liked that poem so much, he would make it a point to show. Normally it was glorifying him. But when we read, we understand, it was more like, there is one personality who has understood exactly what I have come here for. It is more like a revelation. So Prabhupada struggled and struggled very hard. There is a book, Our Srila Prabhupada, by what's her name? Mula Prakriti Mataji. And she said that so many people she interviewed, they are not big preachers or sannyasis or gurus. One of them is saying that at Advaita Acharya's place, Shantipur, Prabhupada had told the pujari that one day I am going to go and preach to the Westerners and make them devotees of Lord Gauranga. One Babaji doing his bhajan somewhere, he says, this person? Oh, this person I know. Sometimes evening, sometimes at night, midnight, I would be staying near the kutir where he used to stay. And his prayers would be, hey Rupa Goswami, hey Sanatan Goswami, please, please, daya karo, give me mercy, my mission is to preach, give me mercy, please. So he said, I was surprised that he has such a big mission now. So we feel sometimes that Prabhupada was told that you should preach, and then he waited, like, okay, if Krishna wants his mission, then he will do everything. No, not like that. Prabhupada showed by his example that it is Krishna's mission, but the devotee does it as if it is his mission. So desperately going from pillar to post, seeking where he can get help. And finally, today is the day when his ship started plying its course from Calcutta Harbour. Just imagine, it is a few days before Janmashtami. Prabhupada celebrated Janmashtami on the ship itself. He had, like this could be, it was August 13th in 1965 when he left. By Tithi it has come today. Someone told the Dainik Baswamati, I hope I got the name correct, that Swami Abhay Charanarvinda has left for USA for preaching. And newspapers, they say, okay, that's good news. So they put it. But the wordings could not be any more correct. India's message of peace and goodwill. Swami A.C. Bhaktivedanta, a small flyer. Hardly anybody would have noticed that something very significant going to come from this particular voyage. A worldwide movement is going to come up. But generally, the Lord always does things according to the proper time, place and circumstances. Hiranyakashipu is shouting, shrieking. So to match that noise, the spiller also made a big noise. And that noise silenced him and his cadre completely. His cohorts, Hiranyakashipu's soldiers, they're always,
If our boss is big, then you can do all kinds of dadagiri. You can just torture anybody, do anything. Have you seen that? There's a big, the mafia don and his henchmen. And they appear to be more menacing than him. Because they know he'll protect us. Whatever we do, he'll protect us. So Hiranyakashipu's soldiers always fed on pride, arrogance. But a simple pillar breaking, and it knocked them off their socks completely. They couldn't understand. So sound itself, that sound which Bhagavatam describes as appeared to crack the universe, it shattered their hearts. Arjuna and Krishna's conch shells shattered the hearts of Dhritarashtra, and I mean the sons of Dhritarashtra. So never underestimate the power of sound vibration if it is a proper sound vibration. Everything depends upon sound. Everything. So Srila Prabhupada, a humble 69-year-old sannyasi going to preach, not just neglected, but thoroughly discouraged by all people whom he knew. And the more people would discourage, the more desperate he would become, that I have to go. So normally we would feel that if that is true, then obviously if there is so much sincerity, then Krishna has to make the road very clear, right? At least remove all the obstacles himself. No. In the very next week, first heart attack. And Prabhupada is saying, writing his diary, chest pains, burning sensation, no appetite, dizzy, the ship is completely, the sea is very rough. And 3 days later, or 2 days later, another one. And Prabhupada said, now I could be finished. The third one and his end. So why should you or me complain that, you know, when I start something, then so many impediments come and so many obstacles come. This is the way of life. The fact is that each and every of our acharya is a, not just a simple preacher in the sense of ashirvad, ashirvad, but pardon me, I'm using the word, it's like a holy war on illusion. Every religion or every acharya has encouraged his followers for a war on illusion, for a war on misconception. Srila Prabhupada says again in that 66th lecture, we live in wretched condition. He's telling those hippies there, as early as 1966, that we live, and he's telling Americans, that we live in a wretched condition, feeling that life is not eternal, life is not full of knowledge, and life is not eternally blissful. Destruction of real life, destruction of this real life, Prabhupada defines that, this is materialism. I mean, I think it's a very heavy definition. Sometimes people say, well, what is spiritualism and what is materialism? You say, well, this is spiritual. My beads are spiritual. My Bhagavatam is spiritual. This temple is spiritual. Food is spiritual. Because of its connection. But basically, destruction of these real life principles, that is materialism. Absence of any consciousness of Krishna. And obviously, when you want to bring Krishna in, there is a clash. There is a clash of consciousnesses. Prahlad is saying as if, why you ask me? He's everywhere. And Krishna is, where is he? It is as black and white as that. It is going to be eternally like that. This is so many years ago. Today also it's going to be the same thing. There is no way where Krishna and Maya can be put in the same framework. It's just not possible. Premnadi Prabhu was asking me yesterday in this new Gopal Fun School. Now we have parents taking interest. So one person said, I am successful. I am upwardly mobile in my corporate ladder. I am climbing ladders very rapidly, but I am full of anxiety. And I see my anxiety is growing. Do you have any process where the anxiety goes low, but the success goes up? So I was saying, look at this. This is the Indian, they say in English, nouveau riche, the new rich people. They're not rich previously. Few generations, they were simple. But now with IT and other sectors booming, they have so much money, they don't know what to do. So let's say the poor class of Indians, their questions could be, can Krishna consciousness make me successful? The middle class, can Krishna consciousness remove my anxiety? And the rich class, can Krishna consciousness keep my success intact and remove my anxiety? Isn't it? But we have to understand that Krishna consciousness means you have to engage in the nine processes. Your desire to be successful materially, your role model is Hiranyakashipu. Just see how he had his fate. Do you think if you keep his consciousness as your role model, will you have anything else? So it's not that Krishna is envious of your success. Who cares? Krishna says, Bhinna, this all earth, water, fire, air, ether is like my separated energy. I don't even care where it went. But we have grasped it. Oh, this is such a important thing. So therefore, this desire to give Krishna is what was paramount in Prabhupada's heart. Prabhupada did not become a devotee for the sake of preaching. In fact, Prabhupada didn't become a devotee at all. He was a devotee. Prabhupada wrote to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, as far as your question about me being Krishna conscious, I don't remember a single moment in my life when I forgot Krishna. I mean, who can say that? Who can say that? Some South Indian astrologer tried to find out, looking at Prabhupada's chart, what could be his gati. Forgot gati, he said, this person has no karma. So how do I calculate things? The previous things have to be understood so that you can understand your present and then what could be your future. He said, this left side page is blank. Obviously, it has to be. Prabhupada directly came from that small select group. Of course, it's not small. We say Anandakoti Vaishnavanda. It could be small in a sense, private. Small not in the sense of number. But Krishna's own group, he was sent here specifically to preach, not with the idea to conquer people's wealth, conquer people's minds, or conquer people's ambitions, but to conquer their hearts. Give them Krishna. So in this evangelism means this desperation to go and give is our birthright. We have to be like that. That's what this sampradaya is for. Of course, it has two components. One is the internal war on illusion, and one is the external war on illusion. Sometimes the external war is easy. You tell people, get out of illusion, do this, be spiritual, chant Hare Krishna with purity. Then we should realize the preacher is also telling himself. He also is part of the crowd. So that's the internal war on illusion. But the external war, especially now that our movement seems to be at some kind of a fork as to what do we do? Do we curtail our preaching? Or those days are gone. Those were the days, you know, when Prabhupada was there. If we say that, then we limit Prabhupada to a particular time frame, 1896, 1977. But Prabhupada was not a person like that. In fact, more miracles can happen
when we have this faith that Prabhupada has never left. His Holiness Bhakti Tirth Maharaj had this great idea. He would inspire temples, especially in North America. Let's have a Prabhupada's coming festival. Imagine yourself for a moment that Prabhupada is coming next Monday. How will you put the temple in order? How will you preach? How will you do this? How will you do that? So, His Grace Virabhao Prabhu, I had taken the story from his Vyaspaja homage. He said Prabhupada had to do everything in a sense, everything. He had to teach us his pranam mantra. Because none of us were qualified to glorify him properly. Swamiji, you are so nice, you make the best gulab jamuns. That's not a pranam mantra, or that's not something. Of course, he did make the best gulab jamuns. You make the nicest prasad, you sing so well, you dance in that Swami step. So Prabhupada said, my pranam mantra, namaste, I worship him, I offer my obeisances, Saraswate, the disciple of Saraswati Goswami, Deve, Gauravani Pracharine, he has come here to preach the message of Lord Chaitanya. Especially, what were the two focal points? Nirvisheshvad, that there is no variety, no variegatedness in the spiritual realm, and Shunyavad. Ultimately, everything is zero, void. Everything is zero. First is a philosophy where you don't have taste. Second is a philosophy where you are frustrated. Spiritual life is a positive thing. It is not a reaction to something. Paschatya Desha Tarine. Of course, it was not just Paschatya Desha that he actually saved. He again came back to India. Gave the same thing here. And then, with Krishna giving intelligence and Prabhupada giving the external preaching efforts, we have so many people who understand that now we know what's clear. I'm sorry, I didn't tell what I was supposed to tell. That Orissa fellow I was talking about, I just diverted into so many things. So he said that Durga is supreme, Pai is supreme, that is supreme. So I said, you don't eat meat, right? He says, well, we used to. So I said, but then, well, but no, never on Wednesday, never on Monday, never on Tuesday, and mainly on Wednesday and Sunday. So Indians have this kind of completely sort of a haberdashery of spirituality. At least in the West, it's eat every day because it's good for you. If it is bad, we'll see later. But what Hinduism gave Indians is, like we go to this book distribution thing, people say, Bhagavad Gita, I have taken non-veg today, so I can't touch it. I said, take it! No, but you know, how do I touch it? If you don't opt for Krishna consciousness, this is the funny something in the name of religion what you will have. We have to decide. We want to be satisfied with this? Okay, Krishna consciousness seems to be sometimes very much demanding, so many rules, so many regulations, don't sit like this, keep your hands out, chant like this, do this, do this, do this. If it is a science, it has to have do's and don'ts. If you want something else, it's outside, available. And the result is mental slavery, intellectual slavery. And thank God, thank Krishna for Prabhupada departing today. He left India in order to put India right. He said, I was not encouraged in India what to do. I tried for 40 years, one disciple. And 11 years, 7,000 plus. So this is what we have in our history. It's a miracle. Centuries down the line, people would say, there were people who actually saw this preacher doing this, establishing temples, writing books. They actually read his books. Of course, the books will be available for the next 10,000 years. In what form, I don't know. What English or whatever. But the fact is that all of us today, we didn't meet Prabhupada personally, except we have Nartaki Mataji representing that small group of select individuals who actually have that. So we need to depend upon them to understand how Prabhupada is there today too.
And more miracles can come if we follow that spirit of Prabhupada. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Shri Radha Gopinath ki. Dai Gaur Premanande.